This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. I want to thank the latest raters and reviewers. I've got one on Apple Podcasts, that is Olay Girl, and one on Podchaser.com, that is Crystal Sun. Thank you both for rating and reviewing the podcast. That really helps for people to discover the podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening. I'll give another plug here for the new private Facebook group, Deconversion Anonymous. Again, that has taken off and is thriving. It is absolutely fun to watch people connect with one another. There are lots of former guests in the group. If there's one of your favorite episodes and you really wish you could talk to that person, they might be there. You should join and check it out. facebook.com/groups/deconversion, and the links will be in the show notes. Special thanks to Mike T for editing today's podcast. On to today's show. My guest today is Jack Robertson. Jack has a podcast called The Musings of an ADD Mind. As the title implies, he has ADD, and that played into his deconversion a little bit. He says he was never quite sure if he truly believed or whether it was just a hyper-focus on Christianity. Jack is very much on a very long journey, both politically and spiritually, and we get to hear him in that process. Jack also has a brand new puppy named Higgins. The photo of the episode has a picture of him. Higgins is as tall as Jack. If you don't often see the picture associated with the episode, this one is absolutely worth it. Here is Jack Robertson to tell his story. Jack, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Thank you for having me on, David. I appreciate it.
It's always exciting to have people reach out and want to tell their stories. So thank you for responding to my desperate plea for people to come on and tell their stories.
It's hard to have a show without guests in your case.
This so is true.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
This is true. So as always, the beginning question is, what was your faith tradition like growing up?
I grew up Southern Baptist. My mom was super mega Southern Baptist.
Okay.
I don't hold any sort of like hatred or being upset at mom. That's just who she was. And my mom, for the most part, when you talk about sort of the how a Christian is supposed to be and act and treat people, that was my mom.
Okay.
But she believed everything like with satanic panic, and there were a couple other odd things that sort of affected me since I was the oldest child that my siblings didn't have to go through.
Okay. Okay.
Let's see. I wasn't allowed to listen to any sort of music that wasn't Christian music, with the exception of country, because that's what dad listened to, and Neil Diamond, because my mom loved Neil Diamond.
I love it. Exceptions.
Yes. Well, I mean, if she's going to listen to Neil Diamond. But I guess I was in sixth grade and I got in trouble because I was listening to the local pop station. And my dad just sort of looked at her and said, "He's a kid. That's what he's going to listen to.
Yeah.
He can listen to that music." And my mom said, "Okay," which was sort of weird because I wasn't allowed to go to the mall by myself until I was 16 because I might get kidnapped because of the satanic panic.
Oh, dear. Oh, man. I think we've said on the podcast before that the idea of the secular music that's allowed is always whatever today's adult contemporary is. right. Like whatever the parents' age is, whatever's adult contemporary for them, that's fine. That's secular music's fine.
Which is why my kids like Metallica and Tool.
So you had some restrictions, it sounds like.
I did. And they were usually kind of odd things like that. And some things to this day still affect me. I wasn't allowed to play Dungeons and Dragons because that lets demons in. My kids play it and they're like, "Dad, can you play?" And I know that there's no such thing as demons. I just can't play it. There's like some block in my head that I just can't do it. And it's weird that at 50 years old, that's ingrained in me.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of things like that, that people go through, you know, post deconstruction, deconversion. There's just things that you rationally know aren't a problem, but you can't undo some of that.
Yeah. It's weird. Like I said, I let my kids play because I always thought that was ridiculous. I just can't play with them.
Right. Okay.
I think also part of the reason mom was super strict with me is because about 4 years before I was born, my mom had a kid and her parents made her put him up for adoption. So I think some of all of that, like weird restrictions that she had on me is because I was the baby she got to keep.
Yeah.
And so like, I guess the thought of, you know, some Satan worshiping psycho kidnapping me at the mall was more than she could bear.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have the natural propensity for some parents to be overprotective. And then you add on top of that, this layer of supernatural elements and yeah, that'd be terrifying.
I think it was for her. The cool thing is I met my brother when I was 31. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And strangely enough, his adoptive parents named him the same name I had. So my mom had two kids with the same name.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I just always found that funny.
Yeah.
Remember the Bob Newhart thing? This is my brother, Larry, and my other brother, Larry.
Yes. Yeah.
But anyway, I guess one thing I need to mention is I have sort of suffered my whole life with ADD. And
okay.
I was diagnosed so long ago, it wasn't called ADD or ADHD. I was just a hyperactive, annoying kid. Part of my ADD, though, is I tend to hyper focus on things if it interests me. And so looking back now, the times where I was like super mega Christian, I'm not sure if it's because I actually believed or if I was hyper focusing on it. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Interesting. That was the question I was going to ask, is if faith was ever real for you internally, but it sounds like that's a complicated answer.
Yeah, there were periods in my life where it was. In high school, there was like a year where like I recommitted my life to Jesus at summer camp, you know, church summer camp. And then as an adult, I sort of did the same thing. And then sort of both times something happened and I just sort of quit going to church.
Okay.
And this sounds weird. I feel like I was my entire life one click away from not believing in God, but believing in God at the same time. I know that's kind of odd. And I don't know if I'm verbalizing it correctly, if that makes sense.
I think it's honesty. Right. When I reflect back on my time of faith, I recognize now how often I was protecting myself from the truth.
Right.
You know, and so I think, you know, someone like yourself, maybe you were just more honest about that. You know, you were more aware or conscious of the fact that something's not quite right yet.
Yeah. I remember when I was 4, my mom was reading the Bible to me and she was reading the Adam and Eve story. And I told her that I didn't think it was fair that all snakes had to lose their legs because the devil took the form of a snake. And I thought, you know, you don't punish my brother and sister when I do something wrong, but
right.
God punished like every single snake for some dude just taking their shape. And I was like, that just didn't seem fair to me.
Yeah.
And I know it frustrated my mom at the time because I don't think she'd ever thought of that.
Yeah. Yes.
But she just sort of explained it away. And then 1 year at vacation Bible school, we were talking about, you know, Egypt and the Pharaoh. And I got in trouble because I was pointing out that Pharaoh would have let him go, but God hardened his heart and wouldn't let him go. I'm like, how is he not the bad guy here? He killed all those Egyptians.
Yeah. Seriously, I mean, so many of the stories in the Bible, as soon as you take off the rose-colored glasses, they're truly horrifying, right? If you truly let the implications reveal themselves, it's bad.
Yeah, the Friendly Atheist did a video on YouTube that chalked up like known deaths and plausible deaths by God in the Bible, and then he compared it to Satan, and like Satan was 10 and God was something like 47 million.
Yes.
Yeah, those were just things that always bugged me. And then strangely, as an adult, I'm like, God has this strange foreskin fetish.
Yes.
I know that's a weird thing to comment, but it's mentioned frequently in the Bible.
Yeah.
And so just stuff like that, though, I would kind of read it. I've read the Bible through and through 3 times. And I would just read things and think, but he's the bad guy. Yeah, he replaced Job's kids with new kids, but if my first set of kids died, I would miss them horribly, and the new kids wouldn't replace them.
Exactly.
I feel that way about my dogs.
My favorite kind of look at the story of Job is Jennifer Michael Hecht, her book, Doubt, A History. And she talks about Job's wife being the hero of that story, because she tells Job, curse God and die. You know, like, right? I thought that was beautiful. That's a great twist on the way to interpret that story.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just stuff like that. And then in high school, we went to camp, and as summer camp is designed to do, I, you know, rededicated my life to Christ. And, you know, when you look back on it, that is the whole purpose of summer camp. You're in there with all of this. You're locked sort of away from everybody. You know, there's a preacher preaching the whole time, multiple services a day. You know, my mom didn't care that I was allergic to the place we went to and spent the whole time hopped up on Benadryl and sneezing. And I was miserable, but somehow it still got to me. And I rededicated my life to Christ. And then the next year I was one of those flagpole praying people before church and going to the church meetup at lunch. And then what sort of stopped that, I had a girlfriend and we did the deed. And okay. I confided, I'm a guy.
You're a human, but yes. Okay.
Right. Yes. I confided in some friends of mine, and even though this time frame was pre sort of purity culture, they sort of like went off on me. And I thought, well, that wasn't, you know, the thing I was expecting, like, hey, you know, you can be forgiven, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
And then like the next time I went to church, everybody in the youth group knew what I had like confided in them, and I was like, wow, that's super Christian-y. So I never went back.
Yeah. Ouch. That's gotta hurt.
Yeah. And then I met my wife now, shortly after I graduated from high school, and she had a 5-month-old baby, and we just hit it off. And this is what I talk about when I say my mom was always super like loving. In 1991, teenage pregnancy was still heavily frowned upon. I mean, it is now, but it was really frowned upon then. And my mom loved my girlfriend, now wife, and loved the little girl. And she didn't treat her any different. In fact, she treated her just like a grandkid from the get-go.
Right.
And then when we got married, I did adopt her. And I was as equally a poor parent to her as I was my biological children. That's a joke. Okay. And then I was in the Army. And I know that there's the statement of there are no atheists in a foxhole, but just through training and getting deployed to Kuwait, with the potential to have to fight again. In 96, Saddam Hussein pulled 20,000 troops to the Kuwaiti border, and Bill Clinton sent 5,000 of us from Fort Hood to stop him. We would have. Mm-hmm. And I was never, you know, terrified where I was, you know, praying or anything like that.
Were you consciously, like, had you decided you no longer believed at that point, or?
I was indifferent, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not that I had decided I don't believe. I just didn't care about it.
Okay.
So when I would come home, Mom would invite us to church, and we would go to church. And at that time, she had moved on from Southern Baptist to, I don't really know what the denomination was, but I was freaked out as an adult the first time I went in there and the preacher was preaching and people started dancing.
Okay.
When the Holy Spirit hit them. Yeah, I was like, okay. What the heck?
A little different than Baptist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, without saying the last name, my mom would get irritated because I started calling a friend of hers that was dancing Disco Doris.
Okay. Yeah.
Mom wasn't too pleased about that.
I guess not. Yeah.
When my eldest daughter was about 14, my sister took her to church. And she liked it. And it's a large mega church in Oklahoma City with multiple campuses. I don't know if you've heard it, Life Church.
I'm not familiar with it, but I'm sure people in Oklahoma are.
Yeah, they have like 30 campuses throughout the country.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And so then my wife started going, and then she convinced me to go, and I went, and it was, you know, different because it was sort of the modern Christian pop music. And
yeah,
I realize now it was more fast food church because they had like four services a day, but everybody was super nice and friendly, and I didn't have to dress up for church, which was a big thing for me because I'm a firm believer that the business world needs to start with business casual shorts.
Yes.
And so I went all in again, and it was like a good solid 6 years that I was always going to church and taking my kids to church and serving at church and greeting people and having Bible studies in my house. And I read the Bible again, and I was all in. And I was part of a group that was helping people recover from drug addiction.
Okay.
Which to me is a pretty important thing.
Yeah.
And just one day we went to have our meeting and they were like, yeah, the church doesn't want to let us come in and use the church anymore because they're not, you know, going to be doing programs that are extra like this. And I was like, but it doesn't cost the church anything. There's already an event going on at the time that we're using it. It's not like we're costing you, you know, utilities.
Right. Right.
I was like, don't you want people to, you know, not do heroin or crack? I was like, that's an important ministry,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so once again, I was like, well, this is just stupid. And my wife and I sort of went around to other churches, and I just wasn't happy at any of them. I didn't like any of them. And so we quit going. And once again, I just sort of became indifferent. And if my sister invited me to go to church, you know, something going on, I would go. And frequently my mom went there. She had stepped back from crazy dancing church. And so, you know, I would go with Mom if she wanted me to, because, you know, it's your mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just became indifferent. And the thing I told you about in the email was, I guess it was like 4 years ago, a friend of mine posted on Facebook that she had applied for a job and that 50 other people had also interviewed for that job. And she said, could you pray for me? And I had just watched a video where the person does the random comment generator where someone wins a prize. And I was like, well, how does God decide which of those 50 people? This is Oklahoma. 47 of them are doing the exact same thing she's doing, asking for prayer. Yeah. No, like, does God have like a prayer generator that, and it's Steve from Bethany,
right?
You know, that gets the job.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what, does he decide it by whose friends pray the most for it? Well, she had 50 people pray, but he had 75. So I'm going to go with that person. I just thought, this is stupid. God is stupid. There is no God.
Okay.
And it was like, bam, I was a non-believer.
Yeah. Wow. That is really interesting. One of the things I really relate to your story there is, and I think many other people will too, is there's kind of a phase that you go through near the end. You're not done yet, but you're unsatisfied with the particular church you're in and you go church shopping, right? You think, well, maybe this will be better and maybe this will fit me better. And it works a little bit for maybe it extends things for a little while, but what's really happening is you're changing and deep down somewhere, you know, something's not quite right and none of the churches are going to be satisfying.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. And then after that happened, I think it was a video. I read it, something I don't remember, but the person said, you've already quit believing in all of the other gods that the world's ever had. What's one more?
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, well, that's true. I don't believe in Zeus.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I often, say, like if I'm talking to an apologist or something, it's like, I expend the exact amount of psychic energy that you do worrying about whether Zeus will be angry with you, right? That I do for Yahweh. And it's not convincing to the apologist, but it does clarify what we're trying to express.
Exactly. I'm not worried that Thor's going to come down and hit me with his hammer.
Exactly.
It would be kind of cool if he did, maybe. But yeah, just stuff like that. It was literally, I sort of believed, and then I just, bam, I didn't. And okay. I even went a period of time where I didn't search out podcasts for other people that didn't, I didn't even know there was a term called deconversion. I just felt like I'm not. But after a year or two, I realized I have all of these strange issues from growing up, in a super religious, a half super religious home, because my dad was not super religious. That brings up another point. I always thought it was unfair that he did not have to go to church on Sunday and Wednesday nights.
Yes. Yes.
My mom thought otherwise.
Again, I think you're telling other people's stories there, right? I think lots of times one caregiver is totally dedicated and the other one isn't. And the kids go along with the caregiver who wants to go to church, and it is unfair. It's a glaring signpost that something is wrong.
Yeah. Why did dad get to stay home and watch Hill Street Blues? I had to go. Just things like that. And when I decided, I do have these issues, that's when I decided to seek out, websites or videos or podcasts of other people.
Okay.
Because I thought, I can't be alone in this. There have to be other people going through the same thing that I am.
Yeah.
And then I found your podcast and a couple others that I listened to, and then saw, people that are in the Christian music world that, all of a sudden they release a tweet or an Instagram, I don't believe in God anymore. And I'm like, I feel you.
Yeah.
I'm just, not famous.
Exactly.
In that world.
Yeah. What are some of the other podcasts or what are the other resources did you find useful?
Now I can't think of any of them.
No worries.
I listened to The Friendly Atheist and then The Thinking Atheist and John Steingart,
yeah. He's been on the podcast. So
Yeah. I listened to his podcast that he started. And if you're listening, you haven't put one out since the beginning of September, bro. And just there's several of them. And then I started watching Telltale on YouTube, even though his is more from a Jehovah's Witness type of a thing. And one of my big things is I love history, and I will watch a ton of stuff about any type of history. And during the pandemic, I was working from home and I would put things on in the background, and usually it was YouTube. And I found a YouTube channel where he just talks about the history of Mesopotamia and the Levant and all of that, which, by the way, is incredibly dynamic. You should learn about that time. It's amazing. It's Game of Thrones without dragons.
Yes.
But I started watching that, which led me to other professors that would have like their class online. And then I hear people talk something I never knew, that El was part of the Mesopotamian pantheon, and that Yahweh probably was more, you know, south of Israel. Was that Median or whatever it was? And that at some point, what probably happened was those two gods merged and became one god.
Yeah.
Because there's archaeological evidence for it. And just stuff like that, just all of a sudden just cemented, you know, that it's just a book, a poorly written book.
I think when you start to, particularly the Torah, the Pentateuch of the Old Testament, when you start to dig in and find out, you know, each different name for God could have represented a different God in a different culture, and that it is a pantheon. Pantheon's the right word, that there, it's not a God, it's multiple gods. And, you know, that starts to really mess with all of both Jewish and Christian theology. But again, it's just taking an honest look at what the texts actually say.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's weird that history cemented my deconversion, but I guess that's just me. The weirdness that's me.
I don't think you're alone in that at all. I think, you know, again, sorry, I hate to just continue to beat upon apologists, but one of the reasons they focus so hard on the idea of inerrancy is that the stories are riddled with holes. And so without this concept of inerrancy, then it does fall apart. Like, there's just no way to, you can't, you know, duct tape and baling wire the thing together and keep it solid.
Exactly. And inerrancy is funny because in Hebrew, there is no J, right? J came later in his, your book doesn't even get Jesus's name right. It was, you know, Yeshua, which is Joshua in Greek.
Yeah.
So it's hard to claim that the Bible is without error when the Son of God's name is literally wrong in the Bible. That's like the biggest gaping hole you could have, right?
Yeah, don't get me started on translations, but I think...
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. I guess I need to add, too, that like a lot of other guests that you've had on, the way the church treats, I can't say this because of my ADD, LGBTQ+. I have to say it slow.
Yeah.
Really got to where it disturbed me. And I had, here in Oklahoma City, there was somebody that I want to say he was like 25, 26, and he grew up in, you know, a super religious homeschool home. And he was sent as a teenager and as a young man to conversion therapy. And he ended up being so distraught and distressed over it, he killed himself because he felt, you know, because the church had beat that into him that he was a horrible person. And he felt that he would rather end his life than have to deal with that. And I was like, that's horrible. Why would you do that to your children?
Yeah, the tragedy is that many people who go through that conversion therapy do wind up committing suicide because, just as you say, underlying what is being said is that there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, it broke my heart to read that. And I couldn't imagine doing that to not only my children, but just anybody's kid. You know, you're supposed to love your kids.
Yeah.
Everything. And so it broke my heart. And that was also sort of at that time when I just quit sort of going to church. And that sort of was a big, you know, change in me. I'm not going to say that I was like a bigot or anything like that. I like people. If you're friendly to me, I'll be friendly to you.
Yeah.
I tend to think that once you get to know a person, if they're worth not liking, they'll let you know.
Yeah. Yes.
And it doesn't matter, you know, who they are, who they love, or skin color.
Yeah.
Jerks come in all shapes and sizes.
Yes. This is true.
Yeah. And that was a big deal for me. And it sort of started changing me. And now dealing with that, I have his permission to say this. My son is bisexual.
Okay.
And I can't imagine not loving my son.
Right. Exactly.
For that reason. Now, if you started listening to like country and Western, that's a legit reason.
Just as you said, you know, when you actually know someone, and in your case, your son, whom you love, right? There's no, mm-hmm. There's no way that breaks down these cultural ideas that have been handed down to you. There's just, they can't face up to the love that you have for that person, and you recognize their humanity.
Yeah, I can't imagine my son not feeling that, like he could tell me that.
Right.
About himself, that he would think that I would hate him for it. And I don't understand parents that do that to their children, or just don't like anybody for that reason. But it's, you know, it sort of starts at home. Those are your kids.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that'll tick me off. I'm not a hugger. I'm not going to be one of those people that say, you know, if your parents don't want like you because, you know, you're gay, I'll give you a hug. I won't do that. I'll give you a high five. Not going to hug you, but I will support you. And if, you know, someone kicks you out of your house because of that, you know, I have a spare bedroom that you can stay in until you can get on your feet.
Yeah.
So anyway, I get a little emotional talking about that.
No, absolutely. I think I didn't have a family member, but even just very distant acquaintance friends who were gay, you know, that ate at me. I couldn't, you know, I could not square that circle between what I was supposed to think of them and what I did think of them. and I feel guilty now, like, you know, that it took so long for me to really overcome the Christian background and fully embrace the LGBTQ community. It feels like it took too long. Right.
Right.
But that I remember that tension of just something's got to give here. This is a human being, you know, I can't love them.
That's actually, looking back, one of my biggest regrets in life. I was always the type of person, if you were my friend and if someone was picking on you, I would go and make that person stop. You can't tell by my portliness now, but I was a football player and a wrestler. I was pretty good at both. Mm-hmm. And so I would go and be like, hey, you're not going to do that to my friend. You're going to treat them kindly, because if you're picking on them, you're picking on me. And usually that was enough to stop it. But when I was in high school, there was somebody that was gay and people picked on him. And I never did anything about it. And looking back on it, I'm like,
yeah,
why didn't I stop it? I don't beat myself up for it. I just regret that I, you know, didn't do, because I can't change the past, obviously. But
yeah, absolutely. I think there are many things that we did or did not do or said or did not say that we regret with this kind of hindsight. So I'm curious now, like, is the rest of your family, are they Christian? And how did you talk through that? Have you had that conversation with your family?
My children are all atheist or agnostic, and we all came to that viewpoint separately.
Okay.
I think my wife, you know, the term unequally yoked, she still believes.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if the degree.
Okay.
My sister is a strong believer, but the Trump administration has completely changed her viewpoints, which is the same with me. I could get into that. And my brother is a riddle wrapped in a mystery. He doesn't go to church. He loves to drink, but he loves Jesus. It's really weird.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like modern church. He thinks that when you go to church, that it needs to be the choir comes out singing in robes. There needs to be a hymnal, you know, the old right. pews. You don't have individual chairs. That's not churchy.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm just like, dude, we were drinking beer in our kilts at the bar last night. What's
yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. He's my brother is an interesting fella.
So do they know, do they know that you have had a change of mind?
My brother doesn't. And this sounds weird. I haven't told my brother because his way of debating with you is to send you, he YouTube bombs you with videos of people that agree with him.
Sure.
And I just don't want to get 100 Alex Jones videos or preacher videos texted to me with, watch this. This is why you're wrong.
Yeah.
I don't care if he knows. I just don't want to get all of those videos.
Yeah.
And I think my sister has a clue.
Okay.
But I'm not like hateful towards, you know, religion or people that are religious. My mom was on hospice early this year and she passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Jack.
Oh, it's all right. Thank you. She wanted us as she was laying there sort of before she slipped out of consciousness. She wanted us to read the Bible to her. Mm-hmm. Well, I wasn't going to not do that for my mom.
Yeah.
So I read John and Acts and Romans, and we went through the Bible fairly quick when people are working in 1 hour shifts reading the Bible. It's yeah, amazing yeah. how fast that can go.
Yeah.
And I just find this funny. My mom didn't want us to read John 3 to her because she didn't like that one. It was her least favorite of the books by John. I just found that funny. She's dying and she's like, yeah, don't read me. Skip that book.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I found that funny.
Yeah. I definitely think that, you know, when you are losing a loved one, when they are in their final days, you do whatever you can to comfort them. I try to keep on this side of lying, but, you know, do what you can to have them be comfortable, as you know, and that may be uncomfortable for you. I think that's the way to go.
You know, I love my mom. I miss my mom. She wanted me to do that for her. I would think I would be kind of horrible if I didn't.
So you hinted earlier that the Trump phenomenon had an impact on you. Do you want to describe that for us then?
I couldn't understand how the very things people demonized and hated Bill Clinton for, Donald Trump had done like 10 times worse.
Yeah.
And I couldn't square that. And then all of a sudden, all these evangelicals are coming in for Trump. And I'm like, you know, this guy like has never not cheated on a wife.
Yeah.
He cheated on his current wife 6 days after giving birth with a porn star.
Yeah.
But he's God's man for the presidency. I was like, yeah. That doesn't make any sense. And as you know, the longer the election went on, and then when he was president, it became like a cult-like following. And I did not understand that. I had always been like a conservative Republican before that. And now I'm a liberal.
Yeah.
For some of my family, that would be a harder thing for them.
That's
to take
worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just could never square that, how you're saying he has the anointing of God And I'm just like, you know, there are other people that were running for president that like actually have read the Bible. Yeah. It seems to me that maybe God would have picked one of them.
Yeah.
But that whole phenomenon just was weird. And then when COVID started, his reaction to that, and then sort of the same thing, all of these evangelicals, you know, going nuts and talking about how abortion is horrible, life matters, God loves all life, but I'm not going to put a mask on to prevent you from getting a disease that could kill you.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? That's like the least Christian-y thing you can do. I'm pretty certain if Jesus were alive today, he'd be wearing a mask. And he wouldn't need to, right?
Yes. Yeah, excellent point. You know, yeah.
If there was a Jesus and he got COVID, he could just like touch himself and he'd heal himself.
Yeah. I find it fascinating that, you know, having watched this play out, and still, it is still playing out, but the evangelicals lost the moral high ground. They never had it, but they, right. You know, that they purported to have. And now there's just, it's just naked ambition, and there's no way to hide that. It's clearly political, and there's no way you can defend from a Christian perspective why Trump would make a better president.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It's mind-boggling to me. I have spent so many hours talking with my wife and my kids, and every time we end it with, I just don't understand it. I don't get it. And, you know, the masks and the pandemic and these, you know, you see these preachers up there preaching about, you know, if you wear a mask in my church, I'm going to have you removed. Wow. That seems loving.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, both from the evangelical perspective and the conservative political perspective, it seems like a bad strategy to have your constituencies be vulnerable to a deadly disease.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you depend on tithes, it seems to me that you would want them all to mask, because if they're dead, you're not getting their 10%, right?
Exactly.
Of course, now I sort of have other reasons why the evangelical church and even like the independent fundamental Baptist and the new independent fundamental Baptist, because the old ones weren't conservative enough.
Right. Yes.
And when I see stuff like there is no such thing as marital rape, when you get married, if the husband wants it, you have to do it. And I'm like, no, that's not the case. Rape is rape. And if you are fine with your child being raped and you arrange the marriage, in my opinion, you're a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah.
And you see, you know, that's a big thing with those people that believe that. And it drives me insane. I don't know.
Again, I think you take the rose-colored glasses off and there's no way to spin that to something moral in any way. It is immoral.
I agree 100%. It's maddening to me because my love for my children is so great that I wouldn't want someone to do that.
Right.
You know, to my kid, my eldest daughter's boyfriend hit her one time and she didn't tell me because she was afraid I was go over there and beat the crap out of him. She didn't want me to get arrested.
Yes.
So anyway.
So let's, as we're starting to wrap up, tell me a bit about, you know, this side of deconversion. What things give meaning for your life? What are some of the sources of information that you find valuable?
Well, one thing I would suggest, if you're in this process and you listen to conservative talk radio and Fox News, take a year off and don't listen to any news other than your local weather. That creates a fog on your mind. Mm. And when I did that, it was one of the biggest changes in me, because I realized that the food I was being fed was kind of poison.
Yeah.
And that was a big change. And find stuff in your community that you like and join that. There are lots of local clubs. Go volunteer somewhere. You know, your time is one of the most valuable assets you have. Volunteer. And it doesn't even have to be like serving food at a homeless shelter or something like that. If you're like proud of your Scandinavian history, there's probably a Scandinavian club where you live, or Scottish club, or Irish club, or Kelp, you know, join that and you'll meet new friends, and that will help replace sort of the loss of your church family. Because when you quit going, the church family that loves you tends to never see how you're doing.
Right. But, yes.
But just doing stuff like that, and you'll be surprised how easy it can be to just sort of move on. And my wife and I got a puppy. That training him helps.
Yeah. Something to work on. And yeah,
I do not have the energy level that he has. Nor do I grow at the rate that he's growing at.
Yeah.
But you know, stuff like that, there's just all sorts of things. Find something that interests you in your community and go be a part of it. Go volunteer. You won't know anyone at first, but you didn't know anybody when you switched churches the first time.
Yeah.
And you'll meet people and make good friends, and you'll be fine. Yeah.
That's awesome. Jack, before I let you go, I understand that you have a podcast of your own. Do you want to tell us about that?
I do. I have a podcast called Musings of an ADD Mind, because I deal with that. And the beautiful thing about naming it that is I can talk about whatever I want. So we talk some about my non-understanding of Trump and his issues and COVID. And this month I have various friends of mine that I've interviewed just about their experiences growing up in America.
Okay.
All sorts of people. My one friend is Korean American, and she talks about growing up Korean American in a very small Kansas farming town.
Yeah.
And how she grew up eating kimchi at home and sauerkraut with all of her friends. She's like, I love the stinky cabbage food. And then I'm going to have people on that talk about history, and I'm going to talk about space, just whatever strikes me at the moment. When you've had 50 years of hyper-focusing on subjects, you know a lot of random crap.
Cool. Very cool. Well, we will have links in the show notes for that. And Jack, just thank you so much for telling your story.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Final thoughts on the episode. I really appreciate Jack's honesty in talking about the growth that he has gone through, both on the politics side and on the spiritual side, having his son come out as bisexual, but having come from a very traditionalist, conservative Christian background. I really think it's interesting that history played such a significant part of Jack's story, that beginning to recognize the stories of the Old Testament are very similar to those of others in Mesopotamia. But that highlights again the need to just search out the truth wherever it may be found. That many of us protected ourselves from that truth by having sources of information that were off limits. In this case, history. Just digging into history was a part of that. I also appreciated Jack's honesty in talking about not being sure whether he was a deep believer or that it was potentially the ADD hyper-focus element. He just was all in from that perspective. As we said in the discussion, I think that's just Jack being more honest than some of us, including me. I don't think it takes away from the fact that Jack was all in, that he was trying to live out the Christian life to the best of his ability. But one of the most fascinating stories that Jack told was early in the episode, when he and his girlfriend had had sex, and he told some confidants, and those confidants basically told on them to the entire youth group. And that feeling of being judged was very significant. And I think beyond that, Jack says explicitly that he expected there to be some grace. And instead of grace, it was judgment. I think that actually was a really pivotal moment in Jack's story. And one of the fatal flaws within Christianity is that the concept of grace is built into what Jesus has to say in the New Testament. And yet, in practice, that rarely actually occurs. As an example of real grace is when Jack was able to read the Bible for his mother who was dying. That would have been incredibly uncomfortable, and I'm sure he struggled to make that decision, and yet his mother was more important than purity in that particular moment. I really commend Jack for that act of grace. I want to thank Jack for being on the podcast and for being so honest and telling his story. I'll remind you here that Jack has a podcast called Musings of an ADD Mind. There will be links in the show notes. It seems like several of the last episodes, Trump has come up in a more overt way than I have addressed in the past. My apologies. I don't actually like this to be a political podcast. And yet it is such a inflection point for so many people. From 2016 on or so, really we get the entire evangelical phenomena community from Trump, a watershed moment for evangelicals and ex-evangelicals. The secular grace thought of the week is when Jack and I talked about guilt for our prior selves. In Jack's case, the anti-LGBTQ stance before his transformation and before knowing that his son was bisexual. I think there are so many places that we can look back with hindsight, with 2020 vision, and no, we did the wrong thing, we said the wrong thing, or we didn't do or say the right thing. It is really easy to beat yourself up about that. The secular grace thought is that we have to allow ourselves to grow as human beings. We are all on that journey. We are all growing as human beings and learning about one another and how we relate to each other. And although I don't think we should look back and make excuses, I do think that we should give ourselves some grace to continue to grow, to become more loving, more inclusive, more embracing human beings. And Jack epitomizes that by talking about, I can't imagine not loving my son. That captures it all right there. Until next time, my name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. Time for the footnotes. The beat is called Waves from Makai Beats. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can promote it on your social media. You can subscribe to it in your favorite podcast application. And you can rate and review it on podchaser.com. You can also support the podcast by clicking on the affiliate links for books on gracefulatheist.com. If you have podcast production experience and you would like to participate with the podcast, please get in touch with me. Have you gone through a faith transition and do you need to tell your story? Reach out. If you are a creator or work in the deconstruction, deconversion, or secular humanism spaces and would like to be on the podcast, just ask. If you'd like to financially support the podcast, there's links in the show notes. To find me, you can Google Graceful Atheist. You can Google deconversion. You can Google secular grace. You can send me an email, gracefulatheist@gmail.com, or you can check out the website, gracefulatheist.com. My name is David, and I am trying to be the graceful atheist. Join me and be graceful human beings. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.